This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Brooklyn Kitchen. Join me every Wednesday as I talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today's episode 82 of Feast Your Ears. I'm pleased to be back for my seventh season here in the Heritage Radio studio behind Roberta's in Bushwick. If you have just tuning in, you have 81 other episodes that you could listen to of this show. And if you listen to them all in a row, you'll hear me in your dreams, I think. I'm really pleased to have Jesse Singh here from Babuji in the studio with me. Thanks, Jesse, for joining me. Jesse has two restaurants currently, he and his wife, Jennifer, right?
Correct.
They have Babuji here in New York City, and then they also have a location of Babuji. They didn't choose a different name, same name. San Francisco.
Correct, same name.
Yeah. And so Jesse grew up in Australia. But after being born in India, and then met his wife, who's from Brooklyn, and they opened a restaurant in Melbourne, which they don't own anymore, which is also called Babuji.
Correct.
So there's a theme here. And then they came to New York, and the first Babuji in America opened to great fanfare, and now they are moved to San Francisco. So thanks so much for making time back in New York, probably checking on your restaurant here, and then going back to San Francisco.
Correct. Thanks, mate. Yep.
So I would love to sort of start at the beginning. I was really interested to find out when I started to do a little bit of research, and I watched a couple of videos online that you appeared in, that you're not a trained chef.
No, mate. Not self-taught chef.
Me neither. I mean, I don't have a restaurant, but you know, I find that to be really fascinating and interesting, especially because it's not like you're not a trained chef who opened a food cart or a food truck. I was just in Portland, where I feel like everybody who's not a trained chef like has a food truck, right? And so it's not quite the same. But you now have two locations of a critically acclaimed restaurant in this country, standing up against all these people who went to culinary school. Where'd you learn to cook?
My mom's kitchen. So a lot of foods come from mom's, the grandma, my aunties, and Indian temples. That's where I have a big influence. That's where I start learning. And I would cook, actually, when family will go every Wednesday night and a Sunday to a temple. And you have to cook for about 4,000 or 5,000 people. And it's all volunteers. So everybody volunteered themselves to go and prep and cook. And I'd done all my life. So that's why. And food's always, I always loved food. I remember my mom kicking me out of the kitchen. Get out of here. Because it's not for the men's.
Oh, sure. I see.
In Indian food. Yeah. Mostly in India or Indian kitchen. It's always either mom or sister is cooking food for everybody. But then they give up. They say, all right, you can come and help.
So for you, there's really a spiritual connection to the food because it was so connected to that, to the temples.
Yes.
That's fascinating. And you started out where you were born. You guys had very little electricity, right?
Yep, barely. I mean, until today. I mean, there is barely any electricity in India.
Sure. I mean, I think it's hard for us in the United States to think about that, right? That there are, I mean, you know, everyone that I know who grew up in the United States grew up in a place where you could flick a switch and it would be light, and you could turn a handle and you'd have
hot water. Yeah. I mean, doesn't exist still today.
Right.
Even like most of India, summer, there's barely any electricity. We got a billion people, mate.
Yeah.
And infrastructure is not that good.
Yeah.
And a little wind blows somewhere or a little rain, boom, gone. So no one's depend on, like, we don't have fridge. Most people will have fridge, but they do not depend on it.
Right. Right. Well, and that's one of the reasons, right, historically, that food from warm climates is spiced to the way that it is. A lot of those things, ginger, turmeric, peppers, acids, they're all preservative.
Yep. Right. And it helped raise your body temperature in summer. Like, people think eating spicy food in summer is not good. It's actually very good. It raises your body temperature. You don't feel hot and humid.
Ah, right, because you're hotter. So exactly. Then, yeah, and you sweat more potentially. More.
Yes. So it's a, like, we don't, if it's not in season, you will not find that stuff in India. If tomatoes are not seasoned, you will not see a tomato.
Right.
But because we don't have cold room storage.
Sure.
Room
and the logistics, I'm sure, for distribution is not there.
Yeah, so everything is local. The we call it sabjiwala means vegetable seller. They'll come to your house in front of your doors every day till today. Like, there'll be a guy who's selling potato, then there's a tomato, there's garlic, there's onion. So
each one a separate.
Each
individual.
One separate.
Huh.
So, and it's a small little economy. So many people have jobs. It supports so many people. Then yeah. You're seeing my aunties and moms bargaining with this guy with the potatoes. Like, oh, no, it's not a dollar. No, I'll give you 50 cents going through. You can see that in Asian markets, how moms haggling. But what that did, it brought you three fresh veggies at your doorstep.
Right.
So you didn't need electricity. You didn't need a fridge. You didn't need to have.
And you didn't need to go to the market.
No. You cook everything from scratch. So that's a big, big part of cuisine back home. And I think most of the third world or most of other places where people make food from scratch.
Yeah.
And you get so good and you don't make, you only make enough for that meal. So there's no leftover.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about keeping that because second meal is going to get stopped from scratch.
Right, right, right. So you're just really good at that. It's interesting because I had a guest last season on who wrote an entire book. She's actually Australian. She wrote an entire book about cooking for one.
Yep.
And sort of how to do that. And that's something, I mean, I'm very bad at it because me and my wife and my kids, there's always leftovers because that's what I give them for lunch.
Exactly.
The next day.
It just, life is so busy here and we're dependent on so many other things. If you didn't have a fridge, you would be cooking only for four of those. If you have no choice.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the sort of idea. I mean, Babaji is named from, you talk on the Babaji website, it says that the Hindi term Babaji, when used playfully, is what we New Yorkers might call the mayor of the block. And I totally, anyone who's listening to this who has lived in New York, even if you don't live here now, I'm sure that you had a Babaji. I do.
Everyone.
You
know,
everywhere I've lived,
blocks
there's been
you
one.
Had. Exactly. Yep. This person who lived all his life in a block and he looked after, and he was so proud for that block, so he would go up and down. Keep an eye on everything, make sure everything's good and safe.
Yep.
So that's
knows if you have a light bulb out.
Exactly.
If you didn't put out your trash,
yep.
If somebody hit your car, whatever.
He knew who's moving in, who's moving out, what's going on. So, and he's there to give you advice. Doesn't matter you need it or not. No, it's a Babaji. So that's what we use a Babaji. Babaji is actually a term used by back in time by British in the Raj system. Any Indian person who worked for British. For Indians, he had authority,
okay.
So called him Babaji.
Got
so
it.
I mean, it's a term for high-end government official in India. So you hear a lot, Babaji.
So there's a lot in the meaning of the name of your restaurants.
Then there's a Babaji you can use for your father. Certain part of India, people call Babaji to their dad. Then there's a certain part of India, Babaji used as a grandpa.
Hmm.
Then. You can make fun on someone, if you had a friend who's dressed up really nice, but you know he's got nothing, and you just kind of bubble your head, say Babaji. So it's just how you say it, how you twist it.
Sure.
If someone you're giving respect to, Babaji, so being you serious, right. So give him authority.
So you opened your first Babaji in Melbourne.
Yep.
And you mentioned before the show that you don't own that one anymore.
I don't.
But it's still in your family.
Still in my family. My cousin owned it. He's just like me, young kid who was really into food. Again, not a trained chef. Will come in, hang around all the time, work in kitchen, and say, hey, you can have it. So, and he's doing a really good job.
Oh, that's exciting.
So again, same stating, because the Babaji food is, it's very hard to go hire a proper Indian chef.
Yeah.
Because then they start doing what they think is right compared to, for me to doing the Babaji, it's all about flavor, healthy, color, vibrant. It's fun food.
Yeah.
Rather than same old Indian food that's been repeated.
So tell me a little bit about how you craft your menus. Are they, of course, now we're in America, right? And, or even I'm sure in Melbourne, you could get tomatoes. all year round. Yeah. You can get whatever you want. Yeah. So how do you go about crafting your menu? And are the menus in New York and San Francisco different? Or are you working with
different?
The same?
It's seasonal. Okay. And what's around. So a lot of my menu works on Babuji, New York, always big. Union Square Market always been big, or the Tompkins Square Market. And when I used to live, I lived in Stuytown, so we had a farmer market every Sunday.
Oh, great, yeah.
So the market, the restaurant is dedicated and decide what's in the season. And the menu is very seasonal. I do very, sometimes 6 to 10 menu a year.
Wow.
So it's a lot of change. Yeah, so it's all about, like, if it's in season. So that's how I grew up. I grew up eating food, and my mom, everybody made food, what was around. So didn't come from far. And Indian cooking is that way, so it's easy. And plus, we use a lot of lentils that you can have year-round.
Right, right, right. Dried.
So dry legumes. Yeah. So, but still, babuji, sir, your clean, healthy Indian food that comes from around you, so it doesn't have to travel far from it.
Got it.
And America has very similar as Australian. Like, there's so much good stuff around here.
And your wife is from Brooklyn. Right,
she's born in Brooklyn, grew up in Midtown, Italian family.
And the way the restaurants break down is that you're in the kitchen and she runs front of the house, right?
So yeah, she's the one who came up with the concept.
Got it.
I used to drag her in all those years to Indian restaurant, and we'll come home, we'll stink so bad. She would have to take her clothes off, and she would like get upset. Like, I can't believe. Then she would tell me, how come there is not a cool Indian restaurant where, you know, I mean, you want to go there, you want to line up. There's every other cuisine done it. Indian food hasn't done it. And either Indian food, we have really good cheap and cheery, like you look on Curry Hill, Jackson Heights, Jersey City, or very high-end Michelin star, fine dining, white tablecloth. There was nothing in the middle.
Right.
So that's how the babuji was born.
Got it.
So it's to, all right, bring everybody in. Let's show people Indian cuisine. Hey, it's a good cuisine, just like anyone else.
Yeah. And so now you've had babuji here in New York for a number of years. So who's at the helm? Who's running it while you're in San Francisco?
I have a great team. I have good chefs. Awesome. A lot of people have been with me from a long time. Same thing, a bunch of people moved to San Francisco to open.
Cool.
And they end up staying there. So they say, oh, we love California. I'm like, hey, I love California. Let's stay there. Yeah, great team. And a lot of people I work, I train, they like me. It's easy to work with them and train them and show them your vision. This is what babuji is. It's about flavors. It's not about the old traditional recipes that maybe was born in UK or in the bars and pub. The chicken tikka masala, the Rogan Josh, having 5 chicken, 5 lamb, 5 beef. So basically, our traditional menu was come from like 40s. It had numbers, because the menu was so big. It was same dish being repeated so many times.
Right, with just slight variations.
So I created, just have one simple page menu. That's how every single restaurant and cuisine has. So it should be in Bubba. So you can actually create and cook good food rather than just going to have the 200 items. Like a lot of time you go in a restaurant, it has actually 200 items.
Yeah.
You look in the back, in the kitchen, there's two guys in the kitchen. It's impossible to execute.
Right, and it's impossible to do really well every single dish, of course. We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, I want to pick up on this conversation about ingredients and what ingredients you use here that might not be used in India.
Okay. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum. Today, I'm very pleased to have Jesse Singh here from Babuji, New York and Babuji, San Francisco in the studio. And before the break, Jesse and I were talking about your ingredients and your choice of ingredients and that your cooking is really based on, experiences cooking at temples when you were young and learning from your mother and learning from your family. I did notice, though, that you do have some dishes that are using ingredients that I don't ever think of when I think of Indian food. You have a dish where you have flavored butters that are cooked with oysters on the half shell.
Correct.
And oyster, flavored butter for sure. Totally, sounds Indian. I can almost taste it and smell it when you talk about it. But oysters is not an Indian ingredient.
No, mate. It's more Australian. In Melbourne, we have a beautiful selection of oysters. I go to my fishmonger. He shuck fresh oysters while you go and buy a fish. He actually suck it for you, and you can eat it there.
Oh, nice.
If you guys ever in Melbourne, Australia, go to Queen Victoria Market, and they have a massive seafood section, and you will see a lot of people eating oysters. And same coming in America, I loved eating oysters, especially in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Cross a bridge, Golden Gate Bridge, there's tons of oysters around, and really good. Same thing in New York, there's a lot of good oysters. And that's a dish I really love. And exactly, you're right. You will not see that in any restaurant.
Yeah.
But it was fresh, and just put a pickle, green mango pickle butter. It tasted. Because that's how I ate. Like, people come in my house. Wow, you're eating oyster with butter? You should put that on the menu. I'm like, hey, yeah, we should.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes so much sense, right? That is a true expression of you
as
the chef on the menu. Are there other dishes like that on the menu that are real mashups?
I do locals, New Yorker scallops, raw scallops, wontok scallops. So I put that into my coconut curry. And we constantly tell guests, like sometimes we get a complaint, hey, scallops not cooked. No, I said, we're supposed to eat raw because scallops are so fresh and so good around New York. And it goes in coconut milk curry. So this curry I make it, is basically coconut milk and a fresh curry leaf, no other spice, because I didn't want that oyster. And I do, sometimes I'll put snapper, a lot of raw fish in there, make tuna tartare. Same thing, the tuna.
So when you're doing the curry, you're just putting the raw fish in there as it's going to the table.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah,
got
it's
it.
All like your sashimi style fishes that a lot of people love eating. For me, I don't like cooking a fish or a seafood you can eat raw.
Oh, for sure. I'm with
and you. Especially in my cuisine with spices, and it has so much flavor. Yeah. If you cook the fish and then there's curry that has stew added to together, the seafood is gone.
Right. Right. So it becomes a lump in there.
Exactly.
It's just a piece of protein.
Yeah. So it's about flavors. People come in, wow, I can still taste the raw, but I'm tasting with now a little coconut curry. Or I'm tasting tuna tartare with the chutneys.
Mm.
So oysters with the pickles.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of these things. It's just how I wanted people to experience Indian food.
Yeah. So the reception here in New York and San Francisco for Babuji has been great.
Yes.
You've gotten fantastic press. You'd mentioned to me before the show that your first restaurant was in a small Australian town.
Correct.
Where they weren't really sure what to do with you, and you were told that it's a town that lives on sausage rolls and meat pies.
Exactly.
Which, to me, I mean, initially when I read that, you wrote that to me, I thought, well, wait a minute. Like, there's plenty of, like, meat pie-like flavors in Indian food. So tell me about, I mean, how did that go? Did you win them over ultimately?
Yeah, mate. So I mean, this town, beautiful town, my hometown in Australia, I still call it hometown. It's a Kyneton. It's about an hour away from Melbourne. And people were so friendly to us, to me and Jennifer. Everybody welcomed us to come in, like, oh, great, we'd love to have you guys. And then we became friends with a lot of locals. Then the idea is, hey, we're going to open a restaurant here, Indian restaurant. And a bunch of my mates go, look, man, mate, we love you so much. You know, we never seen Indian before. Forget about having Indian foods. We're worried about you. This town is all about sausage rolls and, pies. Maybe somebody will have a curry pie. Curry pie is a big thing.
Mm.
So a lot of people in Australia would experience curry pie over Indian. But that's like British.
Right.
Madras powder. So they use Madras curry powder with beef and just put in a pie. So pies are like a savory pies that very big in Australia, New Zealand, and UK. So yeah, people were genuinely concerned, like, please don't open your restaurant here. You will not survive.
But it worked out okay.
It worked out.
And now we're so lucky. We have you in New York and San Francisco.
Thank you. Yeah.
I wanted to ask about your daughters. You have two little girls.
Yep.
I have an 8-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. And I think about this a lot, being in the food business. So I'm wondering, what do they think of your food? Do they like Indian food?
They love.
Food?
Yeah, my kids love it. I have two daughters, 5 and 7. My 7-year-old is so happy to have that flavor. She loves the butter chicken, the coconut sauce, the lot of my curry, the rice, garlic naan. And my 5-year-old, she's now getting into it. And
Following Big Sister, right?
And it's, again, because now they're so used to have different profile flavors.
Totally.
And I'm exposing them to all kind of allergies. I mean, we can't do this, we can't do this. Because back home, growing up in India,
you just try everything.
Yeah. So that helps. And then the girls, my girls eat Chinese, the Japanese, the Indian. So we went from baby food direct to adult food.
Yeah.
So we never made like a separate meal had to make. So whatever we cook, they will eat together.
That's awesome. That's great. I mean, that's real important with my family as well. Like, we, you know, always encourage it. My son's a little pickier than my daughter is. My daughter's a big fan of insects.
Yep.
She loves eating insects.
Yeah.
So the other day she was so excited. We got some Mexican chapulines and she took them to school for a snack. And I said, what'd your friends think about that? And she said, well, some of them liked them, some of them didn't.
Yeah. And it's we should be exposing our kid to this cuisine from early childhood. So just like now, a lot of time I experience in my restaurant in New York or San Francisco, people in their mid-50s, 60s, 70s, they never had Indian food in their life.
Yeah.
There's the kids like, no, dad, mom, you have to come here, grandma. You love this Indian food. They're just like, we never had Indian food.
Yeah. Well, or I think, you know, I grew up around New York City, and so the Curry Hill kind of like low rent, kind of cheaper Indian food. So like, you know, biryani for whatever version of that that is that appears there, like that's something that I know. And I think of Indian food and I'm like, oh yeah, it's sort of curry-y and you get naan, which is this bread, and like tandoori chicken is like electric red, you know, this bright thing.
Yeah.
But it took a really long time before I had any real understanding of like, oh, the tandoor is a way of cooking.
Exactly.
And it is a cooking machine that is used for lots of things. It's not just, doesn't make this bright red chicken.
And my great friend, he's from Galveston, Texas. Parents never eaten their food, so we brought him in and we didn't tell him that Indian food. I'm like, it's a barbecue chicken. It's actually tandoori chicken. He loved it. Even now, it's a bread.
Yeah.
It was a garlic naan. Yeah. it's a stew. Yeah, it's a stew. Sorry. So he had a butter chicken and he was like, then we told him, and you just ate Indian food. He goes, I'd be damned. You couldn't believe that he ate Indian food.
Well, I know we're running out of time. I know you've got somewhere else to be this afternoon. I wanted to ask, so what's next for Babuji? So now you've got San Francisco, and I don't mean to like, you know, I know it's very recent and like just getting things going out there. It sounds like your family's settling down on the West Coast, at least for a little bit.
Yep.
Do you have plans for another location yet?
No, not yet. I'm just happy to run these two coasts. It just take time traveling
from New York to
San Francisco. And I have two little girls
and
her family. It just happy with...
I mean, California is a great place.
It is.
I spent some time there when I was a kid, and you know what a wonderful place to have such close access.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah.
And the best thing is the beautiful fruit. Like right now, this summer has been so amazing. Peaches, the apricots, the grapes, the all kind of veggies. And California have a big Asian population, so I get to have experience and play with a lot of the veggies that you find in India, Vietnam, Cambodia that you won't see in New York.
Right. Or if you see them, you'll see them for just a second in one market in Chinatown, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But out there, it's much more.
Much more. Or you have to travel in Queens or some far, and it takes like 2, 3, 4 hours of trip to get in and out. Where San Francisco markets in the middle of the city and they have all the stuff.
Yeah. That's great. Well, anything else you want to mention about the restaurants?
No, mate. We're right on Union Square, 13th and 5th Avenue in San Francisco in the Mission District. Please come say good day and come say hello.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jesse. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Thanks, everybody, for listening to Feast Your Ears today. Big thank you to David Tatasciore, who engineers this show. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org and on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please take a moment to like the show, if you did, in fact, like it. And feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. You can reach me via email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com. You can follow me on social media, @thefoodballer, and you can find... Babuji NYC and @BabujiSF.
Correct.
Online. So follow them, look at their food. You're going to look at it and be really hungry because the photos are beautiful.
Cool.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.